Stone and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving on 102.5, 106.3. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Titans lose a preseason game, which again, preseason, whatever. But we saw the debut of a draft class that there are so many different stories. Whether it's Treylon Burks and him doing nothing, and Trevor Maddich earlier today saying he was disgusted by Burks' effort for a football on the one catch he didn't make yesterday. Whether it's Malik Willis and whether or not he proved last night that he's got the potential to be a long-term starter. Who knows there? The offensive line, according to Trevor, is a total mess, and I would agree with him. And so much more. Chad Withrow joins us, Outkick 360, as always, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. Chad, let's start with this. Your reaction last night to Malik Willis's first performance as an NFL player.
I thought he was fine. I thought he really showed – I thought he showed the promise that he showed at Liberty and why he was a highly thought-of prospect coming into the draft. Now, I think he also showed why he fell to the third round, because he looked uncomfortable at times going through any progression – or seeing guys who were open. And part of that's a product of just not being comfortable with the offense yet. And no one would expect him to be this early in the game as an NFL quarterback and with the Titans. But I thought overall, you know, he flashed the athleticism. The touchdown run was nice. I think he showed a lot of the things that made him a top-notch prospect. But I also didn't see anything earth-shattering that made me think any of the negative parts of Malik Willis and what you would say about some of the things that he really can't do as of right now. I don't think I saw anything that would disprove any of that. The pass to Race McMath was good. I thought it was such a well-designed play, and it was so poorly played by the defensive back.
Yes.
That it was a pretty easy pass and catch. But, I mean, look, he put it where he needed to, and that's a good sign that he showed some accuracy down the field in that moment where a guy was open, because he could have missed him, and he didn't.
What'd you make of Vrabel pulling him and then after the game saying, I told him to throw the ball, he didn't throw the ball, so I took him out?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that's Mike Vrabel to a T, right? That's exactly the type of guy that he is. Look, if they're putting him in there because they want to see what they have in him, and they want to give him a chance to show them something, and what he needs to show is to let it rip at times. So if you're going to be in there that long in a preseason game, the last thing that Mike Vrabel knows that he can run. I don't think there's any question about his ability to run if he has to. But what Vrabel and that coaching staff want to see is him going back in the pocket and firing it to someone and throwing the football and not being so quick to take off and run with it. And I think that was his broader point about what he was saying last night. That, look, we're not putting you in to start the second half so you can, you know, get nervous feet and then try to run or not throw it when you're supposed to. So if you're not going to throw it, we'll just put Logan Woodside in, a guy, you know, who can't throw it either. But, you know, he studies real hard, so he's going to remain on the roster and be the backup quarterback, apparently.
This is exactly where I was going next was Logan. You tweeted me last night, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just telling you what I believe is that Mike Vrabel likes Logan Woodside. He trusts Logan Woodside. Corey Curtis said it on the broadcast yesterday, and I agree with it. What do you make of Mike Vrabel's trust in Logan Woodside after the performance that we saw last night?
Well, look, I mean, I like the guy who picks up my trash every Monday morning. Love him. I'm not going to make him my primary care physician. I don't understand how liking Logan Woodside makes him a backup quarterback in the NFL. He physically isn't good. I mean, this isn't hard analysis to make when you watch him get a chance to play. He looks like 1,000 MAC level quarterbacks I've seen in the college game, and no better or no worse. Jared, I can't fathom watching college football as much as I do, that there's not someone that I've seen play college football that you could bring in as an undrafted guy or just a straight-up free agent that would not be a better backup quarterback than Logan Woodside, that you could also get to learn the playbook and be a great guy in the locker room. I just I think it's very lazy to think that an NFL head coach would keep someone around because they like him. I don't get it. What is he seeing that we're not? Well, what is he seeing in Logan Woodside other than he studies real hard and he's a good teammate? I mean, I could be an NFL backup quarterback if those are the prereqs. I physically can't do the job, just like it looks like Logan Woodside can't physically make the play. So I just don't understand why we're still talking about Logan Woodside as the not a practice squad guy, but as the backup quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. I can think of very few worse backup quarterback situations in NFL than Logan Woodside for the Titans. And also, I'll say this. I think way too many Titans fans and people were trying to jump to the, oh, well, what we saw last night was Malik Willis is definitely the backup, right? So I do think you're right on that, Jared. That's not the case at all. It's one preseason game. I'm just trying to figure out some way or some idea as to why anyone with the Titans thinks that Logan Woodside as backup quarterback is a good idea. And look, I'm not saying it has to be Malik Willis, but if it's not Malik Willis, it should be someone other than Logan Woodside.
Think about this, though. Chad Withrow with us, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. Think about this. Last year, they brought in Matt Barkley to challenge Logan Woodside, and Matt Barkley lost. And the year before, they brought in Trevor Siemian to challenge Logan Woodside, and Trevor Siemian lost. And Trevor Siemian started games last year in the NFL, and Trevor Siemian had started games before that in the NFL. I'm not saying Trevor Simeon's good, but, I mean, again, Trevor Siemian probably better than Logan Woodside. And yet Logan keeps winning the job. It's not like the Titans haven't brought in real competition and almost dared somebody to beat them. For some reason, these guys aren't beating Logan Woodside, Chad.
Well, this is not a meritocracy when you're talking about beating them. This is a coach making a decision. This is not a 40-yard dash and whoever wins has the job and you can physically see who won. This is a coach making a bad decision, quite frankly, because I saw Trevor Siemian perform in the NFL and win games as a starter at multiple times. Does anyone listening to this right now truly believe that if Logan Woodside had to start an NFL game tomorrow, he could win it as a starting quarterback? And I would love for people to text, hit your text line up, call the show, tweet me, tweet you. I'd love for those people to line up and tell me right now why you believe Logan Woodside could start against any team in the NFL and win a game as a starter. I've seen Trevor Siemian do it. I think I've seen Matt Barkley do it. Again, when you say won the job, no, the coaching staff kept him and got rid of the other guys. That doesn't mean that that's what should have happened. That's just what happened in the end. This is like someone winning a record deal over someone else, right? You know, I'm an executive with Capitol Records. And I gave some up-and-coming female singer-songwriter a job, and I signed her. And, you know, well, she won this job over the other. But no, she didn't win it. I kept her around. I signed her. I didn't sign someone else. That's what's happening with Logan Woodside.
You are legitimately worked up about this. I mean,
it bothers me. I watch him play. I'm sure he's a great guy. But, like, be a quality control analyst. If you want to keep him around, right? I mean, there's places in football for Logan Woodside. I don't know him personally, but again, that's someone that if he's so great in the locker room, then give him a coaching gig. He's not a backup quarterback. There's 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. There are 32 backup quarterbacks. You're telling me by making this decision that Logan Woodside is one of the 64 best quarterbacks in the world. Again, someone tweet me, call. I'm trying to follow the logic behind that, of how anyone would argue such.
So here's my theory behind that. Chad Withrow with his Outkick 360. I believe that, let's just say Tannehill sprains an ankle and has to come out of the game, gets concussed. Because Tannehill probably gets hurt all the time and never says anything about it. Concussion, they put him in the protocol. He's out for the rest of the game. Logan goes in. I think there is a comfort level for Mike Vrabel to be able to say, hey, you turn around and give the ball to Derek and you throw it short to the tight end, and if we have to punt, we have to punt. But whatever you do, do not lose the game for us. Whereas I certainly don't think he has that comfort level with Malik Willis. That being said, I'm not sure it's an overly high bar, like to ask a quarterback. That's my theory, though, of why Vrabel believes in Logan Woodside.
I mean, you're giving me further evidence that I could be the backup quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, I could take a snap and turn around and hand the ball off to Derrick Henry. I don't know that I could successfully complete a lot of short passes, but there are so many guys who could fulfill those requirements for the Titans that could also, I don't know, complete a pass down the field and not look miserable trying to throw the ball past 10 yards. I mean, there are plenty of people who could do both. I'm not saying that there's this plethora of great backup quarterbacks in the NFL, but there are enough talented quarterbacks that have played big-time college football or not that could be better than Logan Woodside. I refuse to believe this is the best option.
Okay, let's say
or any NFL team.
Let's say the Cleveland Browns cut Josh Dobbs, because I think they have about like nine quarterbacks.
Sign Josh Dobbs in a heartbeat over Logan Woodside. I mean, Josh Dobbs could win you an NFL game because he can run and make plays and improvise. I mean, he's smart. He's a good locker room guy. I would take Josh Dobbs in a heartbeat over Logan Woodside, and I think any NFL team should be the same way.
Would you take Duck Hodges, the quarterback that the Steelers had a couple years ago who was freaking terrible, would you take him over Logan Woodside as the backup?
I don't know enough about Duck Hodges. He's probably in the Logan Woodside camp. Whatever happened to Patton Robinette at Vanderbilt?
Vandy?
I want to make this equal opportunity. I would take Patton Robinette. I think he had some concussions or some sort of medical thing. I believe he just went to medical school and became a doctor. But give me Patton Robinette in his prime over Logan Woodside. I'd rather have him as Titans backup quarterback. I'm trying to think of other functional SEC quarterbacks I've seen. Pretty much all of them I would take over Logan Woodside.
Duck Hodges announced in April of this year that he's retired from football. So no luck there as far as the Titans are concerned. I do.
That got the appropriate amount of coverage, by the way, when he announced his retirement, which was none. Because I completely forgot about the guy and had no idea he retired. So I'm glad the media did their job there and just ignored that announcement.
Okay, one more. Nathan Peterman or Logan Woodside?
This is a tough one because I've seen Nathan Peterman just completely wet the bed a number of times. I mean, I think Nathan Peterman, though, falls into the camp of there's got to be a better option, just like Logan Woodside. But honestly, I'd take Nathan Peterman from what I've seen in limited time in preseason games and his short time in the NFL as a starter over Logan Woodside.
Chad Withrow, Outkick 360 with us on the program. On the other side, I do want to get into the other guys other than the quarterbacks that played yesterday for the Titans, his reaction from the game as a whole, the rookie class, Treylon Burks, the offensive line. We'll get to that coming up. Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, joining us on the program. Stoneman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 the game.
Racy McMath had a really strong week of practice. He's able to bring it out here on the game field to make a big play for him.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for, and we're still looking for some of these other guys that we hope that can do some things. But you know, that was one of the boxes that we certainly wanted to check off, was to see Racy, you know, continue to do what he's done in practice.
There you go. That was Vrabel. Corey Curtis gives him a compliment to Racy McMath. Says, "Oh, what about the other guys?" Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. So, Chad, I do want your opinions on the Titans as a whole, but I did check the text line there, and apparently a lot of people want to weigh in on your Logan Woodside talk, so we'll do that in a second. What was your thoughts on the Titans as a whole last night?
I thought it was, you know, mostly bad, but it's also preseason game number one, so when you get in the second half of those games, it's almost pointless to watch a lot of what's going on. So things didn't really get bad into the second half, I thought. So the takeaway is, you know, I guess parts of the team were okay in that first half, and then it just got away from the second half. I do want to say, though, because I just heard the clip with Corey Curtis and Mike Vrabel, Corey does a great job on sideline for those games. That it's very different in how they do that broadcast, because I think Dan Helly and Charles Davis, who are also really good, they're not there every day at practice.
Mm-hmm.
So they do a good job of admitting that and using Corey as a second color commentator during the broadcast. So watching the game, I want to give a shout-out to Corey. I know he comes on your show every week, but I really enjoyed his work on the game, and I've enjoyed how they utilize him differently as a sideline reporter during those games to get kind of, you know, the local insight on each player in the team, and he does a really good job with it. So I want to give him a shout-out on that.
So I do want to take that one step further, because I actually thought about this earlier today in reference to that, which is I love that element of having Corey in there. And obviously Corey knows more about the Titans than the other two guys, and they admit that. They know that. But the SEC Network's Game of the Week does that too, where Cole Kublik is an analyst on the field, and Cole played offensive line in the SEC, and he's more of like a second analyst with Jordan Rogers up in the booth. And I find that broadcast, and obviously I'm friends with Corey and I'm friends with Jordan, but I find that broadcast, I like that broadcast more than like say, oh, we're just going to throw it down to Lisa Salters on the sidelines to tell us something that you may not even listen to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like when you can get, I think that's very underutilized, the former player coach that's the sideline reporter. But, I mean, it doesn't have to be that, just someone who's familiar with the teams.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go to this model. I've thought about this for a while. You know, for the national championship games, they have, like, the fan cast, but they also have reporters, you know, on each sideline for the individual teams. What if SEC Network, for example, instead of bringing any sideline reporter, just assigned a sideline reporter from each school?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if it's a road team, you're always going to have people in the city that could do it and do a good job, like a Corey Curtis
sure.
that covers a college team. But on the other sideline, you've got the beat writer for the local website or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Someone that's got some experience on camera, that's got some broadcasting experience, but it could be, you know, you could have a two sideline broadcast, one from each team's perspective, going with an SEC Network broadcast. I would enjoy that more, honestly, because you know you're going to get the insight of each particular team on that game. And you don't always necessarily have that with the broadcasters just coming in on Friday night to call a game.
Sure. Chad Withrow's with us. All right, to the text line. Phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Slick says that he would take Zach Mettenberger over Logan Woodside. I can't agree with that. Zach Mettenberger was freaking terrible, and I mean really freaking terrible. Logan's never played a real game. But when I go back to trust, and again, I know Logan threw some interceptions and has thrown some really bad passes in training camp. I have no trust with anything with Zach Mettenberger. I cannot do that, Chad.
Yeah, the trust element's difficult. But, I mean, Zach Mettenberger, again, this is another example of a guy who was a good college quarterback that just has light years more physical ability than Logan Woodside.
Oh, yeah.
As a quarterback, I mean, just so much more ability and his rocket arm also. Yes, I don't trust Mettenberger, especially when it comes to, you know, getting jumped at losers, I think it was. At some one point in his career when he was out at night. So that's if you're putting check marks into a column, you're going to put the check mark next to Logan Woodside. But this also kind of proves my point that there's just so many guys out there that I feel like could get the job to a level better than Woodside. Someone tweeted me, by the way, during the break that was listening, asking about Tim Tebow or Logan Woodside. And I'm thinking Tim Tebow today, you know, in his, what, mid-30s or whatever he is now, or Tim Tebow when he's at the Broncos, because I would take Tim Tebow a million times over Logan Woodside when he was actually playing in the NFL. He was in a playoff game. You think Logan Woodside was in a playoff game in his career? Come on.
No. But you've done local radio before. Could you imagine if we did a topic of Tim Tebow or Logan Woodside?
It fired up. It would get because people are so passionate about Tim Tebow, it amazes me. I guess I don't get it. I don't know if it's like the faith stuff, or I think it's the faith stuff for people that really love him, you know. But like, I don't understand why Tim Tebow can be so divisive. I just think he's a great college quarterback who is a subpar NFL quarterback and not much more, right? But yeah,
sure.
for a for a local radio topic, Tim Tebow versus Logan Woodside would get people fired up one way or the other.
Oh, we had that moment, I want to say 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when Marcus Mariota got hurt and Matt Castle was the quarterback and the Titans signed Brandon Whedon and Kaepernick was out there. And I want to say for like 3 days, and I'm sure you probably did some of this too, we talked about should the Titans have signed Kaepernick, and honestly, we never had a phone line open when we would talk about that. It was unbelievable how people wanted to get in on that.
Well, I'll go there too. Colin Kaepernick's another great example of a guy with way better physical tools than Logan Woodside, right? I mean, if I'm just looking at, I don't know what Colin Kaepernick is today, but yet another, again, let's just, we could sit there and just go through who recently left college football that's not, that like would want to play in the NFL that's not, or that's a third stringer somewhere else. And I bet I could come up with 75 names, I'm guessing, and that may be a conservative estimate, that could do a better job than Logan Woodside.
Texter asked the question, Chad, you covered a lot of the USFL this year with Outkick. Would you take a USFL quarterback over Logan Woodside?
Totally. Kyle Sloter, who I think he's with the team right now.
I think he just got cut after the Hall of Fame game by Jacksonville.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. He went to Jacksonville. I'd take Kyle Sloter over Logan Woodside. But also, I mean, I think that with all due respect to the USFL, I mean, Logan Woodside is tailor-made for the USFL.
Well, like, he played in the AAF.
That's kind of the level we're talking about, right? Like, there's a number of guys who are smart, heady guys who can learn a playbook quickly, that can get ingratiated with a team and coaching staff quickly. That's part of the prereq for playing in that league. So I think that Logan, in fact, I want to give that Texter full credit because he just found a home for Logan Woodside. It's the USFL. That's the perfect spot for Logan Woodside.
I will only accept that if you and Hutton accept Logan Woodside when he finally decides to hang it up from the USFL after a great career, that you guys accept him onto the Outkick USFL pregame crew.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I don't know that he's going to get a full-time gig with that, but he can definitely join us for the show. I'd love to. I mean, honestly, I admire the guy. Like, I'd like to ask him, you know, how did you make this work for so long? Like, what was the key? Like, how did this happen? I mean, you got to give him credit.
Here's what I really do wonder about that. Here's what I do. Chad Withrow, Outkick 360 with us, presented by Apple Collision Centers. I know you have respect for Vrabel, and I know you think John Robinson's a good general manager. And these guys have been stuck on Logan. He was on the practice squad, then he got released, went to the AAF, came back onto the practice squad, came back as the backup, came back again as the backup, and is the backup now this year. And they obviously like him. And I know that you respect those guys' football opinions. So what is it that they see, Chad? What could it possibly be that you do not?
Well, it's called getting fat and happy with a position. Like, you're just comfortable. I mean, I don't blame them because they're probably thinking – of the issues on this team or this roster, we're not always thinking about, you know, backup quarterback first. Mm-hmm. And we got a guy who we like, who knows the playbook, who we feel like if we put in the game isn't going to lose the game for us right away. But he certainly is not going to help you win it either, is my point. So I think it's more comfort, right? I'm not calling those guys idiots from a personnel standpoint. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a comfort level. I think they'd allow themselves to get too comfortable. While I have the ability to come in and state the obvious and point out what everyone else knows, and that is, if you really wanted to find a better backup quarterback, you could do so in a heartbeat. And I truly believe that.
Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360. Last thing for you. How do you feel like, now that you've seen a kind of Titans preseason game, what do you really care about going into these joint practices with Tampa Bay? And while you've told me that you don't care about what happens in training camp, how important is that compared to, say, just like a regular practice?
I'll give you one guy, Caleb Farley. Mm-hmm. That Caleb Farley, especially in his joint practices, is going to get challenged by some really good receivers for Tampa. And that's, you know, we've talked about the hits with John Robinson, we've talked about his big misses, and it's by the way, it's looking like Dylan Raitt, another pretty big miss.
Oh, Trevor just chucked him under the bus an hour ago.
Yeah, so that's not a good sign. But Caleb Farley needs to be good. I mean, that you cannot have another first round pick that just doesn't work out. So I'm really watching him now moving forward to deliver on that promise of what John Robinson saw in him, even though he's got the injury problems with the knee and the back issue. So, look, I'm hopeful that I'm going to see more out of Caleb Farley. And if I'm looking at one storyline, one guy to watch in these joint practices, it's Farley against these Bucs receivers.
Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, joins us every Friday at 5 o'clock. Chad, appreciate you, bud.
Yep, always fun. Thanks.
Yep, Chad Withrow, the president of the Logan Woodside Fan Club, joining us on the program from Outkick 360. So I got two Titans topics I want to hit on next. One of them Chad will not like, and I think most of the Titan fans don't want to hear it, but it is the truth. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
This team clearly trusts Logan Woodside to run their offense and do what they need to do. And it's, do they feel that comfortable with Malik Willis to come into a game or to play a few games if Ryan Tannehill, you know, something happens that hasn't happened to him so far, and that's to get hurt with the Titans. You know, because there's one thing to like a guy, there's another to trust him. And they have a lot of trust in Logan Woodside.
There you go. That was Corey Curtis on the TV broadcast last night. And I heard that in live time, and I thought to myself, to the Titan fans that don't want Logan Woodside to be the backup quarterback, first of all, Malik Willis was not good last night. I mean, he wasn't horrendous, but he even got yanked out of the game last night by the coach because he asked the quarterback, hey, Malik, I need you to throw the ball more. And it wasn't just for Malik. It wasn't like, hey, Malik, we need you to get better and throw the ball more. It was, we need you to throw the ball more because we have wide receivers that are trying to make this football team, and we need to see if those guys are going to be able to play wide receiver for us. So that's why he got yanked, and he's not going to be the backup this year. It's probably going to be Logan Woodside because, like Corey just said right there, this team trusts Logan Woodside. And I am not as perplexed as Chad, but I am perplexed at the idea that they brought Trevor Siemian in to beat out Logan Woodside in 2020, and he didn't. They brought in Matt Barkley last year to beat out Logan Woodside, and he didn't. And I'll say this, when they brought in Barkley last year, I thought he was just a camp arm, just an extra quarterback to add in here to throw some passes so that Ryan Tannehill's not corking 55 throws a day. Nope. They brought him in to compete with Logan Woodside. Is Matt Barkley even in the NFL right now? Let me look that up. But I just want everybody to know, like, I'm not telling you that they trust Logan Woodside because I have some agenda that is a pro Logan Woodside agenda. That is not the case. I am telling you that they trust Logan Woodside because they just keep him out there.
From what I can tell, Matt Barkley's on Buffalo.
God, Buffalo has a bunch of guys that could really be used on the Titans. Barkley being one of them. David Questenberry being the other. They could, in theory, really use him. But they also have Case Keenum.
They also have Case Keenum. So maybe Barkley will be released at some point.
Maybe. Just like maybe Questenberry will be released. But I'm telling you, what Corey said there in that clip, when I heard it, I was like, I know Titan fans are going to get mad at Corey, and they're going to interpret that as if it's Corey Curtis's opinion that the Titans trust Logan Woodside. No, they've gone into two playoff games, the Ravens and the Bengals. They've gone into those two games where Tannehill is getting his thumb hit on somebody's helmet and it's splitting open from having to put him in there. Just like the Patriots would go into Super Bowls with Brian Hoyer as the backup quarterback. It's reality. The other thing I want to get to is this. I found this to be so funny. So I listened to Trevor Maddich. Trevor was texting me yesterday. We had Trevor on earlier. And Julius Chestnut fumbles the football early on in the game. And I was disappointed because Julius Chestnut has actually carried the football pretty well in training camp so far. Now, he had a fumble early on in camp Joe Jones came in there and knocked the ball loose. And I remember saying, oh, it was a great run by 36, and he fumbled. Who the hell's 36? And now I see Julius Chestnut run the ball every day. And so Chestnut fumbles the ball yesterday, and I'm like, can't make the team fumbling the ball. And Trevor texted me, and remember, Trevor's an offensive lineman. And Trevor texts me, and he's talking about how it's the offensive line's fault. Or not fault. He's texting me that the offensive line is culpable in Julius Chestnut's fumble. This is what Trevor said about it on the show today, which is essentially what he texted me last night during the game.
I thought that Nicholas Petit-Frere at left tackle, where he started the game, was kind of iffy, like quite iffy, for a variety of reasons. For example, early on, we had the fumble of Julius Chestnut, right? On a run to the left. Well, Petit-Frere was at the point of attack on that play. He had a combo block on the defensive end with the tight end. But the tight end came inside of Petit-Frere and got 3 yards of penetration straight up the field right at the point of attack. Chestnut, to his credit, was able to juke him and kind of still get up to the line of scrimmage. But by that point, he was completely off of his rhythm. And when defenders came in, he wasn't squeezing that ball like he should have. Now, he should have been squeezing that ball better. But then again, that was just not a good play by the young left tackle. But then when Petit-Frere kicked over to right tackle after a few series, he actually played quite well there. I was actually a little surprised.
So that's good right there, because you heard right there how Trevor said, Petit-Frere, the offense, guy's wrong spot, Chestnut has to move, fumbles the football. Trevor told me that, and look, Trevor knows a lot more about he knows a lot more about offensive line than I do. He played in the league for a decade. I'm sorry, I don't know the offensive line like that, not going to pretend to know it. Vrabel today was talking about the Chestnut fumble. And again, remember what Trevor just said there about how Petit-Frere, now ultimately Chestnut needs to not fumble the ball, but Petit-Frere and the tight end, the guys inside, outside, make some change and fumbles the ball. This is what Vrabel said today.
Well, I mean, we got off to a slow start offensively, you know, a couple three and outs, and, you know, with the fumble, you know, and you look at the fumble, much like an interception. You know, I think that, you know, Tommy could have helped protect the guy with the ball. I think Nick Petit could have helped protect the guy with the ball. And, you know, that, yes, ultimately the guy that has the ball is responsible for taking care of it. But, you know, we have to, you know, make sure that everybody's seeing this as a group effort, as a team effort.
I mean, once I heard that, I was like, yeah, what Trevor says about the offensive line is probably going to go from here on out. And Trevor is worried about Dylan Radins at right tackle, which makes it even more likely for me to be deep down inside worried about Dylan Radins at right tackle. Ian Mariota has a touchdown apparently in this Falcons preseason.
Yes, he does. Ran it in, I don't know, inside the 10-yard line, little play action, took it to the corner, dove to the pylon. It was a touchdown.
So I've just been looking on Twitter. The Falcons are playing the Lions right now. Don't think it's an accident, by the way, that the NFL Network puts on the Detroit Lions after the start of Hard Knocks. That's pretty natural that they want to, you know, oh, people are going to want to watch this game because it's the team that's on Hard Knocks. And Mariota, from what I've read, because I obviously have been hosting the show, Mariota apparently has been taking some hits already in preseason.
A little bit, yeah. He's been, you know, he's been running, kind of. You know, he's
stupid.
Kind of what he does sometimes.
Stop doing it, Marcus. And apparently Drake London, their top 10 pick, apparently he got hurt again.
Doesn't sound like it's very serious, but he will not return with a knee injury. And it looks like our good friend Khalif Raymond made him a nice little catch down the sideline too. Good, almost 40-yard chunk.
Raymond, Floyd laughed at him. Raymond leaves here, and all of a sudden, Jared Goff just loves throwing him the football. Apparently, I hear that that's been a very competitive game, the Lions and the Falcons. I guess if your team stinks, you can play your starters, and then it becomes a more competitive game.
I think the starters are out already. Goff did start, but Tim Boyle is already in, so we'll see.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Speaking of wild preseason occurrences, one happened last night. I mean wild, and we got to go over it. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday, 1025-1063 the game. Boy, I love the preseason. And I know on this Fireball Hot Take Friday, I know a lot of people out there don't care about the preseason, or they say they don't care about the preseason. Like, as of right now, how many people are truly distraught about how the Titans played last night? Zero. If this were a regular Titans Monday, it would be thousands and thousands and thousands of people that would be very disappointed at the way the Titans played yesterday. But I love preseason football because there are always little tells about the season, like when Trevor Maddich came on today and basically said that he doesn't think Dylan Raiden can play right tackle in the NFL. He didn't say that verbatim, though that's my interpretation of what he said, but that's pretty much what he said after watching Raiden's last night. There is one thing that happened, and I did watch some of the other game, the Giants and the Patriots. There are some things that happen in the preseason that sometimes just absolutely does not make any sense. Think about Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick's the greatest coach who ever lived. I like Bill Belichick. I think Bill Belichick's weird, but I think that, you know, I got a soft spot for Bill. And considering that Ian and I essentially grew up listening for the last 6 years about Bill stories all the time, about Bill did this, Bill did that, I think we all have to respect Bill Belichick and his spot in the game. But ever since Tom Brady left the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick just seems to be doing one dumb thing after another. Now, it looked like the Patriots might be okay with drafting Mac Jones and him being the future at quarterback, and they spent some money and they got a little bit better. And then Josh McDaniels leaves, which is fine. Go out, go get a coordinator, just like the Titans went out and elevated Todd Downing. Now, is he a great coordinator? Probably not, but at least he's a coordinator. What did Bill do? Bill put in Matt Patricia, a longtime defensive coach, to be the senior football advisor, which is what Floyd's title was in New England as well, and coach the offensive line. Longtime defensive coach is coaching the offensive line. The other coach he brought in was Joe Judge, the great coach of the New York Giants that was sneaking the football last year from his own goal line. Who's going to call the plays? Belichick wouldn't tell anybody. So last night, the Patriots play a game, and it looks like Matt Patricia is calling the plays. The guy who 5 years ago was calling the defensive plays is now calling the offensive plays. I'm not sure I've ever seen that before in the NFL. Belichick then, in the middle of the game last night, and apparently it's been an unmitigated disaster as the Patriots are trying to install this new offensive system, which is similar to the offensive system that the Titans run. The Patriots are trying to install it with Patricia and Joe Judge and Belichick and not an offensive coach. When the Titans installed the system, they brought Matt LaFleur in from the Rams, and he installed the system. The Patriots are doing no such thing. So then Bill switches the play caller in the middle of the game. Bill was then asked at the press conference after the game, undoubtedly, about this decision, and Bill undoubtedly gave a very Bill-like answer.
Hey, Bill, we saw both Matt Patricia and Joe Judge taking turns on play call duty tonight on the offense. Is that the plan moving forward, having them switch back and forth? And do you plan on naming a single guy or going with both?
Yeah, well, you know, we did this game. We did a lot of things in this game that are, you know, going to be beneficial in the long run. So whether it's on the coaching staff, playing time, players played and so forth. I mean, that's all, you know, part of the process.
So a very Bill-like answer, right? Everything we did is going to help us out in the long run. So this is, you know, it's by the way, it's not out of line to ask the head coach, so who the hell is going to call the plays? It is not out of line. Bill was then asked a similar question since he didn't really answer the first one.
Bill, what were some of the benefits of having Joe and Matt call plays tonight?
Well, I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to do that.
And he gave, again, a shorter but on-brand answer for Bill Belichick. Then, and I actually think this is a pretty good question, Bill was asked about, so who's going to call the plays in the regular season? Because deep down inside, I know Belichick will look at the tape and they'll say they care about it, and Vrabel will say that he cares about the regular season, but they really don't. So Belichick, when the games matter, who's going to call the plays?
Do you know if one will call plays when the regular season arrives?
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. We'll work it out.
So have you decided?
We're going through a process, just like everything else on this team.
Don't worry about it. So now Bill's starting to get a little ornery. At the beginning, it was just, you know, Bill just kind of being Bill, you know. Yeah, you know, everything we do is, you know, we're trying to help out the team win, you know. It's always, you know. Finally, the third question, he's like, yeah, don't ask us. Don't worry about it. Which I love. Because apparently it feels like the, who's calling the plays for the Patriots is more protected than some feel about, you know, nuclear codes. And so finally, Bill Belichick, then there was the one final pass for Bill Belichick, asked about the offensive coordinator, who's going to freaking call the plays, what are they doing, what's wrong with the Patriots. It was great.
If I could, you mentioned earlier with the offensive play call, you're going through a process. What do you need to see to make a final decision?
We're going through a process. Simple as that.
Okay. It's just a little bit of an unusual situation for us that have watched you guys before. And so, I mean,
what do you want me to do?
I guess we're just looking for a little clarity as to why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Yeah. Going through a process.
Okay.
When Bill says the whole, what do you want me to do? Now, Ken Wisenhunt one time asked me what I thought he should do, and I told him. Because it just happened to be about calling plays. And I asked Wisenhunt if he was going to give up the play calling, and he said no. And then John Glennon asked him about an injury, and then he came back to me, and he was like, what do you think I should do? And I was like, I think you should give it up. And I didn't know that was, like, really controversial or anything. Like, he asked me, so I told him or whatever. And I knew it when I got a text message of somebody saying, hey, good for you. And I was like, oh, man. And this was our old general manager, Jana Hampton, at the time. I walked out of the Titans facility, and I called her, and I was like, hey, I'm just going to give you a heads up. I think I was 25 years old when that happened. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to give you a heads up. I just told an NFL coach how to coach, which is not something that has necessarily stopped here of late. But Belichick, man, he's like, well, trying to intimidate. What do you want us to do? What do you, you know what? I want you to tell me who's going to call the plays. Honestly, I want you, Bill, and I want Bill Belichick to succeed. This is a pro Bill Belichick show. I want Bill to succeed. Maybe not as much as I want Tom to succeed, but I want Bill to succeed. What I want is I want Bill Belichick to go out and get real coaches on the offensive side of the ball. So whenever you get upset about the Titans, or whenever you get upset about Vrabel, or whenever you get upset about the 2020 season when Vrabel didn't have a defensive coordinator and hung Shane Bowen out to dry, just remember that it could be worse. It could be what Belichick's doing now, which is hiring a special teams coach and a defensive coach to call the offense. And then to have them split up who is actually going to call the offense. It is truly, truly amazing. That's it for us. We're out of here. ESPN Radio coming up next. We'll be back Monday at 2 o'clock. By the way, Sounds Baseball taking on Gwinnett tonight. I'll be throwing out the first pitch Sunday. So I'll see you there. 94.9 The Fan for the Sounds. ESPN Radio's next.